Okay, yeah, I changed it slightly for you all because I want to know my audience, right? And what I do is I work in informatics, right? And I'm interested in real-time detection. We've typically been interested in real-time detection in acute infectious diseases, right? How many of y'all were here last year? You heard about flu near you, right? That came out of our corner of their office, right? So detecting flu early. But the problem is when it comes to mental health or chronic conditions, how early is early enough? At best, now we have annual surveillance. But with other data sources, we could have maybe daily or weekly or even hourly surveillance. And so here in mental health, we had two very recent reviews come out. And it typically said, if you want to know what the prevalence of depression is in your population, the best we're going to be able to tell you is from a telephone survey or an in-person survey. We'll give you an estimate for the year. We'll tell you depression prevalence was this much in year 2009 and this much in year 2010. This is a big problem because we all know that mental health problems receive the least amount of funding per quality adjusted life year, right? And part of that problem is we don't have very good surveillance. It's hard to get people to want to spend money. We can't tell them how well that money is being spent at the population level. And instead of thinking about more of the same, what can mental health learn from what we did, right? And so we've done several high-profile works focusing on detection of infectious diseases. And we slowly moved into health behavior using social media like Twitter or aggregating digitally archived media such as the New York Times or Chicago Tribune and reading that to detect like an early detection of an outbreak. But specifically, we've been focusing on search, right? When people go online and they search on Google or Bing or Yahoo, it tells us something about their potential problems or about the potential problems of someone else that they might be searching about, right? So in mental health, we can use it for two ways. I changed my presentation for you. We can use it for exploratory reasons, or we can use it for hypothesis testing. Well, one of the most studied exploratory reasons is seasonality, right? And that's what I'm supposed to be here to talk to you about today. And that is seasonal affective disorder has its own DSM-4 criteria. It's been one of the most studied phenomena in medicine. Just go on PubMed and search it. It has most hits of anything else. But the problem is when you start talking about seasonality and things like schizophrenia, bipolar, ADHD, non-existent. Why? We don't have the surveillance. So here's the most high-profile paper occurring in seasonality. That's from 2005. And what they did is they looked across multiple outcomes, like bipolar, depression. And so the only way they could study it is to say, well, here's people that are interviewed in the summer and spring, and here's people interviewed in the winter and the fall. And we're going to compare the difference, right, between that pooled sample. There's a better way of doing it. And that better way is using internet search queries. So here is in the top panel is the United States and Australia, aggregated at the population level. And these are all mental health, I want to emphasize that, all queries related to mental health. So it includes symptomology, it includes medications, it includes people specifically searching for the problem. So all mental health queries you see in the United States is over this 2006-2011 period, you see these peaks and troughs. And it's pretty consistent, right? This so happens, these peaks and troughs are happening in the winter and in the summer. So an almond health query. And if we model this using some pretty robust wavelet transformations, we see in red and blue and in panel B is that they're very similar, right, in terms of the timing. There's a modest discrepancy in the magnitude of these. And then in panel D kind of tells us in a very sophisticated way that the timing of when that peak starts to happen and when that peak starts to go away is nearly identical in Australia and the United States. That is, we see increases in searches for these problems on the same day in Australia and the United States just 6 months later. Right, so it's very robust, the occurrence of this, right? And it's very consistent. Here is searches for 8 categories of mental health problems. And again, what we've done here is we've taken the modeling strategy where we model the peaks and troughs. You know, red is, again, Australia. The blue is the United States. And what we see is, again, these peaks and troughs occurring in each of these subcategories, right? It's not all seasonal affective disorder. We see mental health information seeking around all these particular phenomena. And in the lower half of the panel of each of those, we see a point estimate for the percent change in seasonal affective disorder. So here's the neat thing. So look at schizophrenia. And what we see, the percent difference in search queries between winter compared to summer is about 37% in Australia, but then about 36.3% in the United States. So It's nearly identical. So we look between nations, it's the identical trend. But here's the neat thing. When we look across, we look within nations across outcomes, we don't see identical trends, right? There's variability here in terms of the magnitude. So what we see the strongest semblances of seasonality for things like schizophrenia and eating disorders, and some of the weakest for things like anxiety, and some modest seasonality for things like bipolar and depression and suicide. What's also of interest to note is each of these lines is a specific year. See how it's 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And what you see is there's some outcomes where it's very consistent and some outcomes where it's more inconsistent, right? We see the same patterns year after year. And so it's very interesting for the rarest outcome, schizophrenia, which actually there's only about 40,000 searches for schizophrenia-related symptoms per month, that you see very consistent timing of when that happens, less consistent with anxiety. And so what this does, this kind of exploratory study does for us, is it helps us get a sense when we have no other data, right? So it gives us kind of some implications. And the one implication is mental health surveillance. So this is a low cost. You know, the BRFSS is our primary CDC sentinel. I spent $21 million, and you can only tell me how many people are depressed once a year? So for this, me and my little group in the corner can do this for just a few hundred thousand. And it's just, it's all salaries. So now, it's also stigma-free. You know, a big bias with the way we traditionally do approaches is you're asking people sensitive issues, right? And they might not be honest. This is an anonymous data source, right? When you look at search queries, nobody knows if you're looking. And it's also instantaneous, right? And it's pretty obvious, it's instantaneous. It has implications for mental health care delivery, this specific study. And that is around reaching patients specifically using advertising. There's tons of online evidence-based mental health treatment programs. But how do we know people use them? Nobody talks about how we disseminate these programs, right? We just think, oh, well, the clinician should tell the patient. Well, we don't do that in Boston, right? We have very little time to talk to them. So we're definitely not sending a website. Second has to do with the terrestrial, you know, realm. Here, boots on the ground. And we can also think about training and screening, right? We can train our fellows, we can train our residents to focus on identification during certain times of the year when it's most likely. Right? Because we don't know specifically what these searches indicate, right? Because there's no criterion to compare it to. But clearly information seeking looks to be face valid for problems, right? It could be severity, you know, incidence or recurrence, but probably problems. But this specific study has really strong implications to MDs. And we're interested in hypothesis generation around mechanisms, right? We all know about, you know, the retinal mechanisms that occurs for seasonal affective disorder. Well, what about mechanisms for, there's something out in the universe that's making every outcome or every major outcome we think about mental health act the same. You know, before we've had theories that say, problem specific. You know, what's the theory behind this problem versus that problem? But the universe is telling us now that we have these billions of data points that no, mental health is entirely behaving in a mood relationship around seasons, right? There's something in the water or something in the air, something in the environment, something in our biology or our social experiences that's driving this. It's probably not just one thing, right? There's this one thing driving it, but there was variability, right, in some of the outcomes. ADHD acted a little different than bipolar. And so then you can say it was something specific like the school year, right, because we know diagnosis happen around the school year. They start in the schools for that particular outcome. So there is variability outside of it. There's something out there driving a general trend. But to give you something that would be more interesting to you, how can we use this, particularly to people here, who you are the boots on the ground, right? You're the people who are the advocates. How do we use this to inform what you do? And how do we use this to inform what policymakers do? Well, we all know about the Great Recession, right? I mean, the economy's in shambles. You know, we could all use more salary support. But how do we know what the effect is on mental health? Well, on health in general. What we do is we rely on rhetoric. Evidence-based medicine becomes evidence-based rhetoric. You know, if you're lucky enough to know the editor, you'll get your commentary in there, and you will say, this is what I think it's doing, right? Because we don't know otherwise, right? Again, we have these annualized estimates. Let's try something else. So what you see here in this blue line is an aggregation of internet search queries in the United States indicative of psychological distress. So things like anxiety and depression. So like the common query would be like, what is depression, symptoms of depression, anxiety, do I have anxiety, treatments for anxiety, or even specific medication. And what we see is there's a pretty consistent seasonal trend going back from 2004 to 2008. But when the economy started to collapse, this seems to be a strong increase, right? You can see it in real time. I mean, people are feeling distressed. They're having symptoms, potential symptoms of depression and anxiety, and it's rapidly increasing. And it's reaching, the outcome here is a bit esoteric, we have to normalize, but it reaches an all-time peak, right about the time that unemployment reaches 10%. But the great thing about this is we can not only just know what the levels are, we can talk about determinants. So when you talk about the economy, it's hard to parse out what the factor that matters is when you have annual surveys, right? Because all these things are happening within that year. But with these acute trends, we can relate it to specific features of the economy like unemployment in the top left-hand corner, underemployment, people working part-time but who want to work full-time, home values, home sale prices, homes in delinquency or foreclosure, how well the stock market's doing. So we see the blue line is that same psychological distress trend, and the red line here is the trend for, that's the different predictor. So like unemployment hasn't went up. You kind of see similarities, but you know, we're also scientists here, so we know this is all bullcrap, right? This is the way we test this. So let's test it in a very robust way. So what we did is we did some very robust time series, some adjustments, some matching methods to get something pretty close to what the causal effect would be at the aggregate level. What you see is that when delinquencies and foreclosures go up about 1% in this month, the next month after, we would predict that search queries for psychological distress would be about 16% higher. But it doesn't just happen one month, right? We're not in a box. It's not like our surveys where we say X causes Y and this is the one difference. It's cumulative. The very next month, the next month after that, we see a similar size increase. 3 months later, we see another increase of about 14%. Well, that's that one change. And 4 months later, we see another large increase. We see similar trends for unemployment and underemployment, and they're half and one quarter in magnitude, right? This kind of makes sense, right? I mean, the fear of delinquency and foreclosure doesn't have to happen to you, right? The fear of it or your experiences with it can be a major factor, even worse than unemployment, and even worse than working part-time, right? So here's some face validity. But what about the thing we spent $700 billion on, right? Shouldn't that matter too? But it doesn't. You know, the S&P 500 doesn't help us discriminate changes in psychological distress like queries. And we don't see so much associated with values. And this makes sense. You know, I originally came from a policy background before I got in informatics and biostatistics. And we know that, you know, people aren't very bright. We're not very good at calculating things, right? People run on intuition. That's how campaigns work, right? Political campaigns. That's how marketing campaigns work. It's driving intuition. So people aren't very sensitive to these dollar signs, but people are sensitive to the fact that my neighbor lost their job or someone in my street lost their house or what's that for sale sign up and why don't I see them there anymore? But because we're dealing with specific queries, we don't have to analyze them in the aggregate. We can analyze them as what specific queries. So what we did here was we ranked the top 20 queries by their relationship with economic features for those top three factors, unemployment, underemployment, and delinquency and foreclosure. What we see is that the list includes the same kind of terms, right? The same 20 appear in the top. So, you know, here we're not really doing a large amount of discrimination. We're discriminating between, like, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson or Tom Brady and, you know, Peyton Manning. So these are the things that really, really matter to the things that really matter, right? But what we see is some strong face validity, right? These queries are the things that we would think of as being indicative of someone who really has a problem. It isn't some MPA student that's searching this, most likely. And so this has implications too, right? It has implications for how we do our policy. It has implications for how we think about how the world changes and how we respond to it. And instead of being responsive 2 years later, we're responsive now. And this next part, this final part, is the first time anybody's seen this besides people in my little corner of the office. How do we know that this matters? Right? I'm telling you, believe me, that people can search for queries, actually have problems, but we don't know, right? So these are an aggregation of survey responses for major depressive disorder from a host of surveys, including the BRFSS. So like the patient health questionnaire would be the gold standard MDD measure, right? And that's included in several questionnaires, telephone surveys. And once you start talking about 10 or 12 surveys, now you're talking a big number, right? You got a big denominator. So this is the typical number of people interviewed by day of the month for all 12 months. So this is the mean per day. And all these surveys that you combine. So what do we have now? We have a criterion. We've taken the data that mental health practitioners and psychiatric epidemiologists tell us is important, survey responses, and we've turned it into a unit of days. Right? And so now we have the gold standard, right? You say that's depression. We have that measure now by day. How well do searches tell us about major depressive disorders? So the black line is survey. And the red line is search queries. So what happens is we see a strong trending there. We can use some pretty basic machine learning models. I won't go into that too much, but that's what Google pays me to do. But we do some basic machine computer science models. And we can pick out what specific queries give us valid forecasts, right? What subset of queries we need to monitor. And when we do that, we can forecast in the right panel major depressive disorders. Not just, it's not now casting, it's not like there's a correlation. It's like, what if I know this trend and I want to predict what depression level will be? You know, this is October, November, right? Pretty much November. What's depression going to be in May? I can do that with 88% accuracy. Today, I can tell you what's going to be in May. And I can also tell you that even if there's a shock in the environment, so it works with natural experiments. Because remember, our training period also included some natural experiments. The Great Recession happened. You know, we had the Katrina oil spill, which we wrote a paper about that too. So what this is the take-home point, is we have new data that we want to give you all to help you get the money that you deserve to fight this problem, to help reduce the burden of mental health problems. Because we'll give you the data at the population level to be able to evaluate your program and evaluate them not only at nation, but we're going to do this at the community level. I can monitor queries in any geography. We specifically know the latitude and longitude of every query. So we know exactly where you live at when you search. And that's my talk for today.